You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, August 11th, 2025. Grandpa Dan streaming with you at RadioAlbion.com. I know we weren't here last week. You no doubt missed the Daily Mail Monday, but we are back once again. I don't have to be in two places at once. So we are back. And again, I'm glad you're kicking off your week with us here at Radio Albion, where I go through a selection of stories from the Daily Mail. And our first story had to go with it. Anytime there's a Daily Mail story concerning anything to do with the Ukraine, it's always going to be laughably stupid propaganda. So I wanted to start with that. Our headline is Former Advisor's Opinion on Putin. Former Trump advisor says Putin will walk out of Alaska summit as a loser. Now, as you all well know, Trump and Putin are supposed to have this summit in Alaska on Friday. Interestingly enough, the UK, the European Union, and even Zelensky has not been invited to this Trump-Putin meeting. And yet they are all scrambling to try to somehow remain relevant. One of the things I thought about this story, I picked this story, aside from the fact that it's always stupid, the lowest tier propaganda when it comes to the Daily Mail and anything to do with Ukraine, is it does give us, I think, some insight into how they're going to try to spin this. It's very telling in the way they're going to try to spin a loss. I mean, they say they've got a deal churned out, and I've seen all kinds of, shall we say, misinformation on the internet of what this deal entails. But the Russian side has been very clear about what they're not going to negotiate, what they're going to require. And now all of a sudden they say, oh, yeah, well, we've got basically what amounts to a rough sketch of a deal. We got enough of a deal to where these two leaders are going to meet. Now, normally speaking, when you have two heads of state coming together to make a, they're not coming together to negotiate. That, generally speaking, has already been worked out because neither side wants to show up and then have the whole thing blow up and leave empty-handed. So normally, of course, we're in clown world, so normally doesn't necessarily apply. But normally, that's all been worked out. Now, I've seen all kinds of BS floated on the internet, basically, you know, oh, Russia's going to agree to nothing. And that's just silly. It will be interesting to see how this works out. And of course, like I say, the EU, the UK, and Zelensky, depending on what his cocaine intake level is for the week, are having a meltdown over it and are going to do their best, and I believe are doing their best, to torpedo any sort of thing because for whatever reason they want to continue the war. Let's go ahead and get into this story. A former Trump advisor has claimed that Russian President Vladimir Putin, which I'm overcoming the temptation to refer to here as Putler, will walk out of his summit with the U.S. president as a loser. You see, because in America in particular, everything has to be viewed through the lens of a sports ball game. So you're going to have one side that's a winner and one side that's a loser. One side's the good guy, one side's the bad guy. They just always go, they know that most people, you know, they think in binary terms. So they always frame this. Which team is going to come out a winner? Which team is, of course, diplomacy and actual negotiations doesn't work this way. Everybody gives a little, everybody takes a little. Each side has their core things they're not willing to surrender on or, you know, compromise on. And if both sides can walk away with those things fulfilled, you get agreement. If not, you don't. It's really fairly simple. Robert O'Brien, who served as a national security advisor in President Donald Trump's first administration, spoke with CNN's Jessica Dean on Saturday about the president's upcoming meeting with Putin to negotiate a ceasefire in the Ukraine. Just the fact that Putin is willing to come to the table to eke out, and now watch the wording here. This guy, of course, is, as always, he was in the first Trump administration, is always with these people in Washington, D.C. You know, they never leave. Like, he was a former advisor to President Trump back in the first administration, and now he's not. And you never notice, like, they never leave and get a regular job. No, now he's a part of some, from what I can tell, military industrial complex consulting firm. They always land in these spots. You know, they never leave and become like somebody with just like a normal job. Like, oh, they're an accountant now. But anyway, the wording here automatically gives us a heads up. Just the fact that Putin is willing to come to the table and eke out a deal. Putin didn't ask for this meeting. The Trump people did. It was Trump that jumped up and told his people, set up a meeting, set it up right away. I want this done. I want it done fast. But you see, the frame they're trying to set here is Putin is begging. He's the one begging for a meeting. Nobody with any critical thinking skills or observation of this thinks that Russia's losing. Remember, Trump whipped out his mega sanctions because he was fed up with Putin. And yet now, all of a sudden, who's going to who to sit down and work out a deal? Let's see. To eke out a deal with Trump shows how the Russian military invasion of Ukraine, which began back in February of 2022, has been a total failure, O'Brien argued. Now, I'm not going to get into the particulars of that little deal because our own Dr. Johnson knows way more about it than I do, has done so many shows. You just go back through Dr. Johnson's Thursday Daily Nationalist shows about the Ukraine thing, the special military operation. And you can get everything, why it's progressed the way it has, why Russia has used the manner it has, what mistakes Russia's made, how, you know, he's beat that. He has covered that from every angle. And like I say, he's much more, you know, has a lot more insight on it than I would give. But it's just laughable. Now, it's been a total failure. So we already in one paragraph, Putin's begging for a deal. He's come crawling to Trump for a deal because of this total failure. Now, what I will say is, okay, how are they defining it a total failure? Because you have to have a framework to come to a conclusion. He's put the naked assertion out here that the Russian special military operation has been a total failure. Okay, well, what's the framework of that? What are the definitions? Don't worry, we're going to get to this. This guy goes on. He wanted all of the territory of Ukraine, and you have to stop there. Never at any point have they said they want the total territory of the Ukraine. Nobody thinks that except for shills and people like this who are spinning a narrative. The media over and over has used that, the full-scale invasion of Ukraine. It was never a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. That's just stupid. I mean, nobody wants the Ukraine. The part everybody wants is the part Russia already has. That's where all the good stuff is. The rest is just a fourth world debt-riddled shithole. But you see, they have to. He makes the assertion it's been a total failure. So now he has to create a fake narrative of what their goals were. See, because if you use their actual goals, that doesn't work. So they have to make up a lie. They have to create a new fake framework. They wanted the entire territory of the Ukraine. He wanted 30 million Ukrainians. Why would he want that? That doesn't. What would he be getting out of it? Ukraine is not, you know, this economic powerhouse that everybody's jealous of. Why would you want that? And he wanted to turn them into Russians. Again, he's going to turn them into Russians. I guess now we have to apply the magic dirt theory. You see, if Russia incorporates it, the dirt becomes magic and they become Russian. O'Brien said of Putin's goals with the invasion. Of course, they're all a lie and they won't get called out. And now he's getting stuck with basically the same deal he had when Obama let him take Crimea and Donetsk and Luhansk. And I never pronounce those right, but wait a minute. So Obama let him have those? I'm missing some. There's a whole lot of in between here that I am missing. Obama let him have Crimea, Donetsk, and Luhansk. I missed that somewhere. He's made no real progress, the former advisor continued. This is not a victory for Putin. He's had this deal, and now he's lost 1 million men. Here we go again. 1 million men in 4 years. Nobody outside of Ukrainian propaganda believes that shit. I mean, you can argue, yeah, all the sides always lie about their casualty numbers. That is a fact. So you have to take a guess. But nobody in their right mind thinks that Russia has lost 1 million men in 4 years. That is just the most low-tier, low-IQ assertion. In other words, let me put it another way, because I don't think this guy believes that either. That assertion is targeted towards the most low-IQ, mentally challenged people on the planet, because that's the only people that are going to buy that. Losing 1 million men in 4 years, basically getting what he had in 2014 from Obama. Oh, so they just told him he could have the breakaway republics. Really? So he did the special military operation for no reason. They just let him have that. So he just, on a whim, oh, that's right, because he wanted the entirety of Ukraine. You see how these lies just get dumber and dumber because they have to stack one on top of the other. I don't have to get into this. Y'all already know. You see, unlike this guy, I don't think y'all are a bunch of freaking morons. So I'm not going to sit here and spell out how this is nonsensical. Oh, he already had the breakaway republics. But he just, because he decided he wanted all of Ukraine, he did a full-scale invasion. Oh, it's this sort of thing just, it's mentally damaging. So he thinks it's a total failure for Putin. But Trump will let him save face, O'Brien claimed. He's very gracious. He's very charming. But Putin's going to walk out of this the loser. I'm just going to go a little further in this because I don't want to just keep ringing this moronic piece to death. But remember how just a few seconds ago we were talking about, you know, this assertion that he already had the break. Don't ask a low hand. I never say it right. I'm not a Russian speaker, but he had the breakaway republics in Crimea. Obama gave that to him, and see, he's a loser because he's that's all he's going to get. It's just that. He already had that. And he's lost 1 million men. It gets better. I want to read a little more because it's funny because he contradicts himself in the same story. O'Brien, who's now chairman of American Global Strategies, LLC, also argued that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, because, you know, Vladimir sounds too Russian, and Zelensky, well, yeah, that doesn't sound Russian or anything Ukrainian. But anyway, he doesn't even need to be present at the upcoming summit in Alaska as the White House considers inviting him. They're not considering inviting him. There's no, I haven't seen anything about inviting this guy. Yes, the matter can't be resolved without Ukraine, but President Trump has met with Zelensky alone several times, including at the Vatican, O'Brien said. And so he's put himself in a position to mediate the dispute. Which is what President Trump really wants. He's a peacemaker, O'Brien claimed. He wants the military deaths to stop, and he wants to get this case resolved. Now, this is the paragraph I wanted to get to. But the former advisor also noted that Zelensky will likely have to agree to cede some land, to give up some territory. Okay, so what is some of this territory? As Putin does not seem to want to budge on his demands for control of the Ukrainian regions of Donetsk, Luhansk. Now, wait a minute, asshole. I'm just... Because you're insulting everybody. This is such an affront to people's intelligence. This same guy just said that Obama gave him Crimea, Donetsk, Luhansk. And now he says Zelensky's going to have to agree because Putin doesn't seem to want to budge on his demand for control of the Ukrainian regions of Donetsk, Luhansk, Zaporizhia, Kherson, and Crimea. But I thought Obama gave that to him. So he already had it. Didn't you just say he was going to be a loser because he already had that and that's all he's going to get? But now we're the same guy talking out of the other side. God, I hate liars. I just absolutely hate them. You know, they just talk out of both sides of their mouth. Would you trust this guy? Would you let this guy be your accountant? If you owned one store, you owned a feed store out in West Texas, you know, selling hay and grain and whatever, a feed store. Would you trust this guy to manage it? Somebody that just lies out of both sides of their mouths to your face while smiling at you with that snake-like smile. Would you trust that person to manage your feed store in Pecos? I wouldn't. Just lie. He sits there and tells us with a straight face that old Putler's going to lose because all he's going to get are these regions that Obama gave him. Obama gave him Crimea. Obama let him have the breakaway portions. And then in the same story, this guy says, well, Zelensky's going to have to move a little bit because for some reason, Putin wants the Ukrainian regions that he just told us Obama gave him. Let's go to another story. Israel is still at it. We've got a new one. You know, the hospitals have been Hamas. We've got a new one. Journalists are now also Hamas. 5 Al Jazeera journalists are killed in Israeli strike on tent in Gaza. And no, the IDF is not going to claim it was an accident. Actually, they're bragging about it. IDF says it was targeting and struck Hamas cell leader posing as a correspondent. 5 Al Jazeera journalists were killed in an Israeli strike on their tent in Gaza City on Sunday in what the IDF claimed was a targeted hit on the head of a Hamas terrorist cell posing as a reporter. The broadcaster, which is primarily based in Doha, Qatar, said 2 reporters and 3 cameramen died in the blast. Al Jazeera named the dead correspondent as Mohammed Khareke and camera operators Ibrahim Zahir, Mohammed Nufal, and Momen Aliwa. I know I'm not saying those right, but I am doing my best effort. The other man slain was Al Jazeera journalist Anas El-Sharif, 28, who has extensively documented the release of Israeli hostages. Al-Sharif also made headlines in January after footage of him removing his armored press vest and helmet went viral following the announcement of a ceasefire, which, of course, Israel broke almost immediately. Only last month, the journalist spoke about his fear that he could be assassinated for exposing the truth of the situation in Gaza. Now, I'll just stop here because this is nothing new. This is what they do. And, you know, like I said, we've had the doctors are Hamas. We've had the refugee camp is Hamas. We've had the church is Hamas. The mosques are Hamas. Of course, the famous is the hospitals are Hamas. And now they do this. And of course, they go to their... Everybody they blow up is Hamas. And I don't think anybody except for the most brain-dead idiots are buying this anymore. I really do. On the one hand, I have pretty low expectations of, you know, as far as people being able to figure things out. But on the other hand, this is so stupid now and so in your face that I do think by the way they're reacting and the way they continue, they're doing this whole push. Did you hear they're not going to call it Hasbro anymore because it has negative connotations because everybody assumes they're lying. So they're going to rebrand. They're not going to stop what they're doing. They're going to rebrand their lying operation. This tells us that it's getting so bad that even with basically a chokehold on the media in the West, it's not working anymore. I was out and about yesterday, and it's so obvious. They can't suppress, even though now this is obvious, a part of what they're trying to do is if they keep blowing up enough people who are courageous enough to go over there, and far be it from me, you know how I feel about journalists in general. But I mean, these aren't people, you know, writing up about how, you know, they're having a meltdown because of what people are saying on the internet. These are journalists that actually have a set of cojones, and they're putting themselves on the line by going over and reporting on what's happening in a war zone. And I don't care what you think about whatever, that takes guts. So, of course, they're going to try to kill them, because you have these images that are out all over the internet of emaciated Palestinians. And again, I don't care if you like Palestinians or not. The images are out there. We've seen the mass amount of destruction. And I'm out and about yesterday, and they had a TV up on mute, thank goodness. And it was 60 Minutes. And, you know, you can tell what the story's about just by what they're doing. And so help me, I kid you not. Yes, we have all of these images out. Israel's propaganda efforts are really downwardly spiraling. So what do you do? Why, of course, you dust off the 80-plus-year-old films of the evil mustache man and do another story about the Holocaust. Because, of course, you do. You know, Yes, complete with pictures of emaciated Jews in the prison camp. Because, of course, you do. That, you know, as the boomers die off, the Holocaust is like Harley Davidson. You are not going to hear that take anywhere else. The Holocaust is like Harley Davidson. As the boomers die out, it's dying out with them, because that's all that's left that buys Harley Davidson or the Holocaust anymore. I mean, yeah, sure, Xers and millennials and stuff, probably the vast majority of them just, yeah, okay, whatever, I guess that happened. But as far as like it being a quasi-religion, and as such, you're not allowed to criticize anything Israel does. The last people left that have that mindset are primarily going to be the boomers. And that's who buys Harley Davidson. So as they die out, both are going to essentially lose their appeal. I mean, how many times can you go off and dust off these black and white films and try to use that as a free pass for what's happening today? You know, I mean, it's just, it reeks. It reeks of desperation. I got one more story I want to get into. Got to go to the UK, because the bobbies, the wonderful British police, continue to be on the case. Police hunt tube vigilantes for some reason in Britain. They call their subway, they call these subways or whatever, they call them the tube. I have no idea why. I guess because they go through a tube of a tunnel. It's not a tunnel, it's a tube. I always have these problems when I would talk to Sven, because he'll whip out these weird British terms. I'm like, I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. Well, you know, it's what? What are we even talking about? Use American English. Vigilante tube passengers face arrest over assault. Okay. Who were they assaulting? Oh, of a naked man on the tube after they took law into their own hands when he dropped his trousers on the packed carriage. Commuters who took the law into their own hands when a tube passenger dropped his trousers in a packed London Underground carriage could face arrest, the Daily Mail can reveal today. See, this is the sort of thing. You have out of control. There's just out of control everything in Britain, particularly in London. And time again, The only time the British police show up. Yes, I am. By the way, those of you who are wondering, I do intend to read this entire, whatever I'm going to read. Not I don't read the entire stories of these things because they're so too long. But I do intend to read the story with my horrible British accent. So I hope you enjoy that. But time and time again, we see this where things are just out of control. Crime is out of control. It's just nuts. And the only time the British police show up is when somebody tries to defend themselves, when somebody takes the law into their own hands. And well, of course, they're taking it in their own hands because you're not doing your freaking job. Anytime you read some nonsense like this, some bullocks like this, and they bemoan, the people are taking the law, vigilantes, they're taking the law into their own hands. The part that's implied that they don't want you to think about is if you were doing your, I am really trying not to F-bomb here. If you were doing your damn job, the people wouldn't have to take the law into their, the only time people have to take the law into their own hands is when you're not doing your damn job, and you're not. The only time the British police show up is if somebody complains about it. They don't do anything, but by golly, you better not. You're just supposed to sit around and be victimized. British Transport Police, the BTP, believe the naked man who has since been detained under the Mental Health Act was assaulted on the district line in East London. Up to four men stepped in when he repeatedly refused to pull up his pants at 3:30 p.m. last Thursday. He was pinned to the floor and carried off the train before being arrested by an off-duty police officer. Now, this doesn't sound like much of an assault. They basically pinned him to the ground and an off-duty officer. Why didn't the off-duty officer arrest those guys? It's just natural. You're supposed to ride the tube and somebody has his tallywhacker out. But detectives are probing whether the vigilantes committed any criminal offenses in the confrontation after he refused to pull up his pants. BTP has appealed for witnesses to the incident, but there have been no arrests over the brawl. If you witness this and you go to the British police to snitch on these people who removed this guy from the train, you deserve everything you get. I'm sorry, you do. If you are going to go and snitch to the British police, oh yes, I know who that was. I saw the video, hello, I didn't witness it, but I saw the video, and I know the blokes that were responsible for this horrid act of vigilantism. If you do something like that and you get your shit kicked in by diversity, good. You're not going to get any complaints, any sympathy from me. You deserve it. Sometimes people just deserve it. If you're going to run, if you know who any of these people are who removed this man from the train because there were kids on the train, and nobody, even if there weren't kids on the train, you should be able to get on public transportation and not have to see some lunatic with a dingus hanging out. If you're going to snitch on these guys, you get whatever's coming to you. I have zero sympathy for you. Now, the rest of the article then wanders off into a completely second story, but for some reason, because it's the Daily Mail, they just, instead of writing another story about this, they just stuck it all together. But they go into a second phase of the story about how dangerous the tubes have become. I'm just going to read this one little section to make a final point about this. Since Sir Sadiq, that's Sadiq Khan, he's a knight now, because of course he is. Since Sir Sadiq became mayor in 2016, tube crime rates have more than doubled, from 9 per every million journeys to more than 21 last March. Similarly, offences have risen on the Overground, DLR and Elizabeth line, which opened in 2022. The Mail's analysis comes after shock statistics laid bare the ever-worsening crime epidemic plaguing commuters. See, it's just a plague. It doesn't come from anywhere in particular. It's just a natural-born phenomenon. It's like a disease outbreak. Plaguing commuters who have fallen victim to violent, racist, sexist, and anti-Semitic assaults. Oh, yes, and by the way, the anti-Semitic one, because I'm not going to get to that. We're going to wrap this up. But, you know, it was somebody complained to a Jew about what Israel is doing to the Palestinians. That was it. Somebody said, oh, your religion is responsible for killing Muslims. And it was like a second to have quick break out some more black and white films of the mustache man and the poor and the Holocaust. One woman was even whipped in the face with a belt in a sickening attack at Green Park Station last January. Liban Ahmed, a very British-sounding name. In fact, he's probably from Scotland or somewhere. Liban Ahmed was handed a suspended 18-month prison sentence. A suspended 18-month prison sentence for the attack. Was caught on film shouting as he moved up and down the platform trying to avoid two men trying to grab him. In a fit of rage, the 27-year-old lashed out with his belt, catching a woman trying to board the train. So he bashed a woman in the face with a belt, and he gets an 18-month prison sentence for the attack. Sven Longshanks went to prison for using the Spanish word for black. And we're supposed to take the British police, the justice system, seriously. Really, that's what you want us to do. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day about something in the UK. I don't even remember what it was. And I told him, I said, you know, look, this country where we live here in the US, you know, I'll be the first person to describe a lot of aspects of this country as quote unquote a shithole. But I said, as critical as I am and as bad as so many things are here in America, at least it's not the UK. The UK has just simply become a meme for itself. It is the self-fulfilling meme. You're supposed to take the British justice system, and you know, this ties in with the beginning with our first part of the story. The British law enforcement is working overtime trying to find out who wouldn't allow this man to stand around with his dick hanging out on a train in front of kids. They're trying to hunt those guys down. Meanwhile, a guy whips a woman in the face. I don't know how badly she was injured, but he assaulted somebody. I don't have to tell you what would happen to you or I if we whipped off our belt and our belt buckle or whatever and smacked somebody in the face. There's going to be serious consequences. He gets an 18-month... And, you know, look, I don't know how... Maybe she just got a scratch on the face, in which case an 18-month suspended sentence might be correct. I'm not even saying the sentence that this guy got was incorrect, because I don't know how badly she was injured. You know, like I say, if she got a little cut on her face or something and a bruise, you know, an 18-month suspended sentence might be correct. Of course, we know deportation's not on the table. Heaven forbid, that'd be racist. But again, my friend spent time in prison in Britain for using the Spanish word for black on a podcast that was like, I don't know, 7 years old or some shit. I'm not taking you serious, Britain. I am not. And if you're not going to, you know, treat people properly, if you're not going to be just, if you're not going to have just laws and you're not going to justly enforce those laws, then don't whine and complain when people take the law into their own hands. We're going to wrap up on that note. I'll be back tomorrow with the Parish of the Patriots program. It is already done. It is just sitting there waiting for you to hear it. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson will be here for the Orthodox Nationalist on Wednesday. And then Dr. Johnson will wrap our week up on Thursday. That's our normal schedule. We don't have a Friday show. I was doing a Friday show, and then I quit doing that. It's just too much. I hope you'll get a chance to check it all out. Enjoy the rest of your week. As always, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.